Hello and welcome to the AFPT Comics Podcast, episode 224, my favorite number of the week. I'm here with Nathan. Nathan, how you doing?
I'm good, man. I am very excited about the news this week, actually. Not the least because there's like a third of what we had to cover last week, but also because there's some really cool stuff. And I'm really excited to talk to our guests later today. How are you?
I am good. Yeah, it's a really beautiful day here in Beverly, Massachusetts.
Beverly, Mass. And,
that's where I want to be. Already here. Yeah, and also who's already going to be here is Leah Williams and Joanne Starr, who are both going to be on later in the show to talk about Power Girl Special Number 1, which is coming out just a few days.
Yeah.
But they also have, Leah's launching a Power Girl series in September, and Joanne is launching Fire and Ice Welcome to Smallville Number 1 out in September. Maybe we'll get a little bit of that. We haven't actually done the interview yet.
Very excited.
We both got to check out the Power Girl special early, and I think people are really going to enjoy it. I mean, the art alone is just so good, and there's some really good character development in both stories. So,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, stay tuned for that. But like you said, there is quite a big amount of news, but it's less news. So it's like, less items, but they're big items.
Big ticket items. Yeah. Like when you win the boat at The Price is Right.
Oh my God. I always feel bad for those people. It's like they live in like Ohio, like a landlocked state or something.
I always wonder about that too. Yeah. What am I supposed to do with this?
Supposedly there's a huge tax issue. So like they literally let you not take the thing because if you do take like the boat, you have to pay like $30,000 in taxes. And a lot of people don't have that kind of money.
No, not just lying around. That's why we're on The Price is Right. We want it.
Yeah.
Give me that.
For a little background on this podcast, Nathan and I actually have to spend $30,000 every episode just to talk.
That's right.
It's a weird tax loophole thing that we're forced to
talk to tax. That's what we call it.
Luckily, we're oil barons by day.
Can you imagine if we were oil barons and like this is the show we decided to do?
We just love comics, man. And like, you know, killing the earth. And before we get to the news, though, the Uncanny Experience, I want to talk about that a little bit. AIPT is a sponsor of this. It's a convention, an immersive X-Fandom event that's taking place September 16th and 17th that is super cool. There are Chris Claremont's going to be there. There's cosplaying going on. It's a convention done in the form of as if Xavier Institute was real and there are classes.
That's so fun.
So Claremont's actually, right? He's going to give an X-Men 101 course, which is just like blows my mind. There's a lot of cool perks and stuff, but I wanted to play this 1 minute ad. I'm really impressed with the production value of this ad. It's a minute, but guess what? You're going to enjoy every second of it. There are like voice actors. It's cool. Anyway, take a look.
This here is Lenore Zan, AKA Rogue.
It's Cal Dodd here, voice of Wolverine from X-Men, the animated series, Bub. I want you to join me at The Uncanny Experience, the ultimate destination for X-Men fans just like you.
Where you will become a mutant student at Xavier's.
And be able to explore the school campus, shop the vendor hall, and meet the creators and stars of the X-Men universe.
There'll be panels, parties, immersive activities all throughout the historic mansion. Whether you're a fan of the comics or the movies or the animated series, you'll find something to love.
This is Chris Claremont. I'm looking forward to seeing you all at the Uncanny Experience.
It's gonna be one hell of a ride, Bob.
I bet it will be uncanny.
Get your tickets now, sugar, at theuncannyexperience.com.
If you're first joining us, this is the AFPT Comics Podcast, where we recap the biggest news of the week. We review our favorite comics, and we pretty much show up every Sunday to do so, to keep you up to date and connected. The connected part is the interview. But also our opinions, so, you know, whatever.
You connect you to anyway. Our opinions.
It's like connect That's right. Anyway, the biggest news of the week would probably be a new Dawn of DC event that was announced on Friday afternoon. Yeah. Batman slash Catwoman, the Gotham War was announced.
Yeah.
And this is going to be basically a traditional crossover that'll be taking place in its own book that'll launch it. August 29th, and then it'll be taking place in Batman 137, 138, and Catwoman 57 and 58. It's a war, folks. Another war in Gotham. We had the Joker War. Now we have the Gotham War. And maybe next year we'll have the Joker-Gotham War.
I mean, it does feel like Batman just can't keep his house in order, right? Like, every summer, there's just chaos running rampant in the streets.
This time, I guess it's more street level. Mm-hmm. It's less robots taking over the world kind of
less
thing.
Less Scarecrow coating the city in fear gas. Yeah. It's exciting also because Teenie Howard and Chip Zdarsky are closely collaborating on this story. And we're spinning directly out of the events of both of their solo books. So both of them are still like heavily dealing with some crap, not only personally, but, you know, they're not really talking about, you know, their past together. So I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, those confrontations, as well as the Gotham War Red Hood by Matt Rosenberg.
Yeah, the backup for Red Hood fans. I mean, I think a lot of people really like what Rosenberg's been doing with Red Hood. So that should be exciting. And it's cool that there's only one tie-in, although we do have, you know, we're coming off Night Terror. Sure. So we're all going to be a little event fatigued at
all
DC when this starts.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, I think it's smart to do this because, like you had said, what Tom King did with Bat and Cat, talk about epic, talk about a long-running thing and a promise that they would get married. Mm-hmm. It's nice that they're possibly going to confront that here. And
I'd love to see
you know, set the story straight.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because when Zdarsky started his run, he actually kind of made a statement that they're broken up, but there's something still between them. So yeah, air out their laundry, so to speak. Maybe literally too. I don't know. Maybe we get a laundry.
That would be
issue.
Great. Like when Dick Grayson does his laundry in Batman Forever, and like Kung Fu dries his shirts.
Yes, but I want Catwoman to do it. But like she cleans her laundry with her own tongue, like in you know Batman Returns.
I don't like that. That's the one thing about Batman Returns I don't like.
Yeah, but yeah, so it's something to look forward to. I know a lot of fans are iffy on this one, like another event. Oh God, Bat Cat. Like, there's a lot of baggage there, but I think they can iron things out, especially with the creators.
That's exactly what I was gonna say. It's like it does seem like they're putting character first, so we'll see.
What we'll also see is major collaborations between Marvel and Hasbro in 2024, along with facsimile issues in September for ROM. I'm going to just say them both at the same time. And the Micronauts.
Yeah.
So Marvel has basically gotten the ability to reprint all of the issues of these books in giant omnibuses in 2024. And maybe they'll start doing their own series too, like they did with Predator.
Man, that would be so great. I mean, this didn't seem like it was ever going to happen, right? Like, I mean, these books have been out of print for literally decades at this point, 40 years plus. And it's also just it's a funny throwback to a time when Marvel could do a tie-in comic based on a toy that failed and it would run for 75 issues.
That's crazy, especially in this day and age.
But I mean, there's been like attempts to sort of reference ROM and Micronauts and stuff like that in recent years, but it's always been very oblique references or, you know, characters in name only. You know, we got Venom Space Knight a few years back. That was like the closest thing we've gotten to like legit Space Knight stuff in a while.
True.
And yeah, I'm just really excited for this. I have a lot of love for ROM going back to when I was a kid and my dad gave me his run of ROM when I was sick, home from school and thinking like, well, why isn't this like on every lunchbox? Why isn't this a cartoon series? So I will 100% be picking these big collections up.
Yeah. ROM is 30 issues long. It's collecting 1 through 29 and then in a Power Man and Iron Fist issue that I guess ROM pops.
Yeah. Which has been not been reprinted like in the essential Power Man and Iron Fist collection. Right. They had to leave that issue out because they didn't own the rights to ROM. Also a big, you know, big get for fans of Heroes for Hire. This is like basically the first half of the original series. So hopefully, you know, we'll get these annually.
Yeah, it's interesting. So ROM, IDW dabbled with the series a little bit in the last couple of years. And then obviously they've kind of lost the license. I also was reading James Gunn wanted to use ROM in the Guardians movie.
Yeah, he's wanted to use him since the first one. And it's so insane to me that now Marvel has the rights back as soon as Guardians 3 is in theaters.
This is a Kevin Feige a Feige move, power move. He did this just as he's finishing Superman scripting. Mm-hmm. And then James Gunn tomorrow is going to announce, I'm giving up my DC role to direct the...
I'm here for the Rom film.
Oh my God, the guy's quit for Rom? That's crazy. I'm not as familiar with Micronauts, though. Is that... So both were toy lines first and then made into comics. Is that correct?
Micronauts, I also only read a little bit of. I know that they've, like... they've used like the microverse and stuff like that in comics in recent years, but basically, yeah, it was based on a toy line from the late 70s. I should also mention both of these books were written by Bill Mantlo, who you know, creator of Rocket Raccoon, like a freaking gem of a person who has been in institutional care since 1992. So if you ever want to donate to a good cause, his family is still accepting donations for his care. I loved Rom, and they would occasionally cross over with, you know, Micronauts. And then it was also a big thing whenever IDW had the license, they would, you know, the two would cross over with them and Transformers and G.I. Joe, and it became this whole big Hasbro universe, which for a while there was an interest in creating a cinematic universe out of all the Hasbro toys. So I don't know if where that still stands with, you know, with Marvel getting the rights back to at least, you know, a chunk of these characters.
Maybe they're dabbling with maybe adapting some of this stuff in the future.
That would be awesome. I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, how this all develops.
Everything from our childhood will soon be owned by the mouse. Speaking of mouse, I guess in a way, sure. Kid Venom was announced this week. Kid Venom, that's right. I noticed some people were pointing out Spider-Boy and Kid Venom. There's a cover where they both have mirrored poses.
Oh,
are they the same person?
That's fun.
So yeah, Marvel revealed some details about Death of the Venomverse number 2, which is coming out August 16th, and they're introducing this Kid Venom character that's pretty cool. it's designed by Taigami, and the cover is by, or the variant cover for it featuring Kid Venom is by Luciano Vecchio. it's interesting, all these kid versions of things, right? Like, we just learned that Wonder Woman has a kid a couple weeks ago. There's Damian, of course, John Kent,
Spider-Boy,
and now Kid Venom. Spider-Boy.
Kid Venom, from 10th century Japan. I love this whole design, his whole vibe. I'm excited to see this story. Written by Cullen Bunn.
Yeah, it should be a lot
for
of fun.
For sure.
I mean, I'm all for kid versions. Let's do it. Let's just go nuts. Hulk? Kid Hulk? Can we get a Kid Hulk?
Little abomination.
My cats eat this treat called Little Surprises, and it just—I laugh every time I pull
one
out.
That's so funny.
Oh, and they make little soups.
I got those for my cats. Yeah.
Let's just put Lil on everything.
It's always a funny word.
It is, it really.
Little soup.
Something that's not Lil is news that Bryce Gold has taken over as head of comics at Kickstarter. This is some interesting news because Bryce was actually the head of content at Comixology for their Comixology Originals line. This is not the first time Comixology has lost a really big figure that's kept things going in the last year. And to me, this is almost bigger news that Comixology is slowly dying. But I mean,
it seems that way,
it
right?
To be
like
seen.
I mean, especially with. Yeah, I mean, such a mover and shaker moving over to Kickstarter. I feel like we're going to see a lot more, you know, big names launching their projects that way.
Right, yeah. So Bryce will be in charge of connecting with and championing the work of promising creators in the comics community. I bet basically kind of fostering more comics projects, maybe from bigger stars.
Yeah,
too.
For sure.
Totally. It's interesting. This is happening at the same time as Distillery. Is also happening, which is another creator-owned operation we've talked about a couple times on this show, but we got more details on their very first comic, The Devil's Cut, which is coming out in August. It's a 72 page premium oversized page pages comic.
I love that
features.
Oh, sorry,
amazing.
Yeah, creators. I love that they're not calling it an anthology. They're calling it a flight, like a beer flight. I think that's so. I don't know. That appeals to the.
In 5 years, distillery president is gonna be like, why did we go all in on alcohol?
I love it. It really appeals to the hipster in me.
Yeah. It is. I actually found it very clever too. It's pretty cute. The creators attached are all of the biggest names, I would say, that have been involved with Distillery from the start, like Mirko Andolfo, Brian Azzarello, Becky Cloonan, Lee Garbutt, Joelle Jones,
Rob V, James Tynan, Francesco Francavilla, Eduardo Riso,
Scott Snyder.
Yeah. Yeah, really.
When I do tweets like this, I try to get as many in as I can.
Sure.
And then I go, and more.
Yeah.
And 9 times out of 10, the people who are and more will quote retweet and say, I'm and more. And I feel a little bad, but it's not my fault Twitter has a limit on characters.
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, soon you'll be able to upload. I mean, right now you can upload entire films to Twitter, but you can't.
Did you see that John Wick 4 was on there? I couldn't believe
that.
It
was so funny.
For hours.
Yeah. I mean, it's a long movie.
Could still be up. I didn't check.
It's a long movie.
Yeah. So basically we're going to. I have a feeling that each story will probably be like a preview of what we're in for with each of the main series that are going to be launched. But we just learned last week that Lunar is going to be distributing for Distillery. Mm-hmm. So they're getting the ducks in a row. It's coming August. We're all going to be excited for that. And maybe we'll have a new series by Christmas.
Yeah. I don't know. Lunar's having a good week as well.
Woo! Lunar is cleaning up. Yeah, so Image Comics has signed an exclusive deal with Lunar. They are moving away from Diamond. And again, this is really big news in the business world because literally they had Todd McFarlane and Eric Larson come out and make statements about how great it was working with Diamond for so long. But guess what? We're moving on. Diamond is, this is not the first time Diamond has essentially
a
lost
major publisher.
A publisher.
Yeah.
Publishers like Marvel, who moved on to Penguin, they're still working with Diamond a little bit because so many comic shops have been using Diamond for so long. They don't want to change.
Yeah. And
I've
so like some places, some publishers will use multiple distributors for either bookstores or comic book shops. And there's like separate avenues.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you know, I've seen a couple times now comic shop owners being like, it sucks that I can't get all the comics with one form. I've got to now do multiple forms and mail them in. But I've also seen comic shops say, this is great news that Image is moving because Diamond's quality of shipment isn't so great sometimes. The stuff comes in damaged, et cetera, et cetera. There's all these reasons. I'm sure Lunar is a really good deal for Image right now. So it's interesting. We're watching Diamond, the gold standard of shipping, kind of fall away at this
point. Yeah, absolutely.
We'll see how things shake out. Maybe in a couple years, Lunar will, you know, people will be complaining it's a monopoly or something.
We'll see.
Well, that's it for news. And our next segment, top books of the week. We're going to talk about our top two favorite comics out this week. What was your second favorite book of the week?
I really enjoyed Action Comics 1055. I feel like I have to say it like that because it's just a big old number.
It's epic.
It's a huge number.
Yeah.
This has been such an interesting arc. Of the main story from Philip Kennedy Johnson and Rafa Sandoval is like so interesting to me in how it is moving forward all of these classic characters while also appealing to my sense of nostalgia. Like there are sequences in this issue that recreate the big final battle from the death and return of Superman. The Eradicator is getting involved, and Johnson has taken the concept of the Eradicator as like this genetic, like this program obsessed with maintaining Kryptonian purity to its next logical step, where he is essentially just like a Nazi hologram with superpowers. Like,
yikes.
It's intense, and everyone's just very much like, hey man, can you chill it with like the genetic shit? Like, can you stop? Like, it's great. It also dives really deeply into John Corbin's character and really makes Metallo much more of a grounded and relatable character. I haven't seen a sort of, oh, you're like a misunderstood Frankenstein's monster arc like this since Clayface became part of the Bat family. Like, it's like that kind of level. I'm really interested in how this is shaping this character in a new direction.
Nice.
In the backup story, Dan Jurgens and Lee Weeks are still telling the Doombreaker storyline with John Kent stranded on another planet and Superman and Lois trying to get him back. Steel Engineer of Tomorrow is setting the groundwork for the future Steelworks stories. And there's just a lot of really great world building being done in the Superman books right now. You know, for a long time, I feel like so much of the rightfully so, a lot of the Superman comics were just very, very hardcore Kal-El focused. And there's a real push in Dawn of DC right now to embrace the whole of the Superman family. So bringing in, you know, developing the Super Twins, developing Connor more. I love what they're doing with these characters and also paying off stories from 30 years ago while they're at it. Also, the Cyborg Superman's just rad as hell.
I mean, you can't go wrong. It looks so cool. You could just stand in a room and you'd be like, wow, I want more
absolutely.
Of this.
Absolutely. No, I love it. And nice. Some weird body horror as they're like cutting down these drones that are called the Necro Hive that are basically, you know, bodies with mechanical bits inside that are being puppeteered by Hank Henshaw. It's some goopy, creepy shit that I didn't expect in a Superman book.
Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies... Sorry. So much music in this podcast. I expected... Yeah, I really liked it, too. I was looking through it, and the visuals are so good. Like, it's cool that the horror element's coming in, too, because, you know, Johnson's bringing this horror element to Hulk soon. Incredible
Hulk. Yes, can't wait for that.
A few weeks. It's horror is still in. It's been like this for, it feels like a couple of years now. I wonder, you know, things ebb and flow. I wonder if it'll switch.
Being told that the upcoming Flash book is going to be sort of a horror series as well, like dealing with the
cosmic horror,
different forces. The different forces and how they relate to the cosmos. And I love that.
Well, my second favorite book of the week was not horror at all.
Oh yeah. I disagree.
It's basically My Little Pony. Extreme Metaverse number 2, which I found to be even better than the first issue.
Yeah, totally.
No shade on the first issue because I liked the first issue too. But this the second issue has three stories. The first story is by Al Ewing and Vincenzo Caradu, who basically take each one set in a different Earth. So this is a multiversal story where there's different takes on Venom. And in this first story, we basically get to see, well, what if Black Cat was following Peter when he went to the Fantastic Four Tower and got the symbiote removed? She sneaks in, wants to steal whatever she's come upon, and gets the symbiote herself. Al Ewing comes up with some clever ideas, like Mr. Fantastic comes up on the fly, how he might subdue the symbiote. And the relationship that actually, it makes me think, wow, why didn't Black Cat get the symbiote? Because it makes so much more sense on some scale. Don't hurt me, Eddie Brock fans! meanwhile, the second story... The second story is by David Pappost and Ken Lashley, and it's basically, what if Venom was a robot?
Right.
I don't really want to spoil why there's a robot element, but Lashley, man, like the 90s vibes are strong with some of the visuals here. He's got freaking lasers coming out of his...
Between this book and in 2099, Carnage 2099, there's a lot of... The 90s are back, baby.
Yeah. We're at that age where they're selling to people around our age, I suppose.
Sure.
And this issue also brings in Carnage, I think it's for the first time in this series. Mm-hmm. That's all building up to the Carnage coming around and killing
everybody. Death of the Venomverse. Yeah. Good pick.
So that's neat to see, like, this is an anthology, but also we're leading somewhere with all of this. And then the last story, is by Clay McLeod and Paul Davidson. And it's basically Mask of the Red Death.
Right.
And Mask of the Red Death is Carnage. And when I got to this story, I have to tell a little tale. When I was in high school, I had a really cheap camera, and I had to do a project with a shoebox. And I had to pick a play? I guess it's a play, right?
Yeah.
Mask of the Red Death. Well, and I pulled out my Carnage action figure.
It's like a story. Yeah, it's a story by Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. I pull out my Carnage action figure, and I made him the Mask of the Red Death, and I narrated the story, and I had Carnage and all these action figures in a shoebox. So when this popped up, I was like, oh my god, it's my childhood in a
that's
comic.
That's amazing. That's cool.
Which was really cool. There's a cool Jester Venom take on this. All three issues have different takes on the Venom costume, which is cool. You know, this series is just like reminding us with like imaginative ideas and creativity, you can make these things work, cut it up and repurpose them in all sorts of interesting ways.
Yeah, no, that's the fun of these kind of, you know, Spider-Verse, Venom-Verse, What If books is getting to see, you know, just a slightly askew take on characters that we know so well.
If these sold so super duper well, right, would Marvel be like Iron Man verse, Hulk-verse,
Into the Havoc verse,
Matter Eater Lad verse?
Oh man, that's DC. I'd watch that though.
Anyway,
Bouncing Boy verse.
Oh my god, amazing. What is your favorite book of the week?
I loved Unstoppable Doom Patrol number 3 by Dennis Culver and Chris Burnham. This is a story called The Fast and the Nebulous, in which Robot Man and Negative Man are trying to evade Kyle Rayner and Guy Gardner so that they don't apprehend a kid who has been taken over by a Starro drone, and not necessarily taken over, but they have become one person together, something new. And there's a lot of it's a fun book full of like really inventive set pieces. There's a really funny moment where Guy Gardner, you know, like Robot Man assumes that they're not going to be chased into Smallville out of respect for Superman, but Guy Gardner just chucks a sign with Superman's face on it at their car.
I hate Guy so much.
He's the best and the worst at the same time. I love Guy. But there's, we'll be talking about Guy later in the show probably. But there is a, there's a lot of really lovely questions and conversations about identity and respecting someone's journey and finding who they are, which I absolutely love. You know, this character Starbro asks to be, you know, like, hey, you know, there's a lot of conversations about call the kid what he wants to be, you know, call the kid what he wants to be called. Like, that's who he is. You know, that's his name. That's his identity. And I love that. I think that's a really important conversation to have, and it's neatly framed around comic, you know, logic. But also this book reinforces this concept that Burnham has been playing with, which I love, is that, you know, Doom Patrol, these characters who have had such a long, varied history of reboots and retcons, it all happened, not necessarily maybe in the way that we saw it happen originally, but like there's references to the painting that ate Paris, and there's references
good.
And there's references to when Larry became part of this gestalt organism of three minds and wanted to be called a different name, and Cliff didn't, you know, respect that at the time, and they have like this really, really lovely heart-to-heart conversation that's very quick and over, but it's in the way that friends would have this conversation, right? Like, they've known each other, you know, in comic book terms, they've known each other for 60 years at this point. So they have that shorthand of just like, I'm sorry, you're right. I didn't ask. I didn't respect what you wanted. I love you. You know, like, and it's, I don't know. I love how this book really, much like the Fantastic Four book that we're both obsessed with right now, really remembers that these characters are family. They're, you know, they may not be related by blood, but they are each other's chosen family, and they're going out there trying to take care of other people that are out there who need a found family, who need to be found, you know. And I just, I don't know, this book makes me really happy, and also delivers everything that I love about Doom Patrol stories and stories about misfits every single month, that it does not miss.
I've reviewed every issue, and I keep saying, why isn't this an ongoing series?
It's gotten extended. I'm really hoping we get an ongoing out of it, or another, you know, another title, because also just the idea of, you know, them trying to open this home for quote unquote freaks is a really lovely idea. And so far we've been focused on them finding all of these people out there. I would love for this to like lead into a series of, Now we're back at Doom Manor, and now we get to all live together with these, you know, 50 people that we found or whatever.
All right, I'm going to say this, and maybe it'll get me sued, but what about Unbreakable Doom Patrol Season 2?
Unbreakable. I love it.
She lied, damn it! That's a reference to Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, for those who don't know. Oh my god, it writes itself.
Elastigirl is strong as hell.
Is it weird that I like all our bits on the show, or am I just crazy?
No, I like our bits.
No, I really liked Unstoppable Doom Patrol 2. It was I considered it for top two, but it didn't quite make the cut for me. But I loved the issue too. I think I give it a 9 out of 10.
This was one of those weeks where I think I loved every book I read this week. Like, it was really difficult to narrow it down.
Yeah, it really was. Which is good. There's not that many books next week, so it might be tough for us.
We'll see what happens. But like, your number one was almost on my top two until these just kind of edged it out.
I really liked Fury number one by Al Ewing, Scott Eden, Cam Smith, Tom Riley, Adam Kubert, Ramon Rosonas. This is a one-shot anniversary issue celebrating Nick Fury's 60th anniversary. Yeah. And, you know, it's extra size, so we get a little bit extra story in here. We actually get stories within the story. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to jump right to it. I love when Nick Fury Jr. is checking records, and it's a fucking comic book. The record is he's reading a comic book of the Howling Commandos.
It's so silly, and I love it. And the caption boxes in the book refer to them as like graphic records or something like that. You know,
another
pictophile, I think, is what they call something like that. It's such a comics, everybody, you know, idea.
Exactly.
And the idea that Nick Fury did go on all of these adventures, but maybe they've been obfuscated by fiction and how they've been recorded. It's so fun.
Right.
It's such a fun idea.
The concept is interesting. It opens with Nick Fury Jr. Basically showing off his James Bondness, Bondiness. You know, there's gadgetry, there's super twists. There's a supervillain that's super good at fighting, and they're giving him the run for his money. And then we dive into these stories within the story where we see the Howling Commandos. Mm-hmm. We get to see Nick Fury in the 60s go to the moon before any American did it for NASA.
Right.
and then eventually we get to see Nick Fury Sr. and where he's at right now. And that progresses the story of the man on the wall, which is interesting.
I couldn't get over. We have a whole segment in here drawn by Adam Kubert in his dad's style.
In the Howling Commando story.
Oh my God. Mm-hmm. I literally gasped when I...
Set in World War II.
I gasped when I flipped that page. It's so great.
Yeah, the older stylings were definitely evident. I love Tom Riley's art in his story. Like, the, disco, retro kind of look to it all was really cool.
It, channels Steranko without doing Steranko, right? Like...
Yeah, that's good.
Like, disco is the perfect word for it, because there's lots of, flashy flashbulb effects and some cool spirals. And, I loved it.
Personally, I don't really get Nick Fury Jr. He's always kind of just been there, and I don't think anyone's done enough with him. And arguing is... He's doing something with him here, and maybe, hopefully, they'll do more, but you never know. I mean, the Man on the Wall storyline kind of was around, and then it fizzled, and then we didn't hear from it for a while. I know Dan Slott kind of brought it back a little bit with Fantastic Four a little bit there, but be it as it may, Al Ewing basically sets up some major new, mystery box kind of threats.
For both characters. For Nick Senior and Junior.
And I mean, there's a MacGuffin element to these, but they've kind of run out of MacGuffins in the larger universe, and Ewing is so good at pulling these ideas that are smaller, big in their own way, but small, and expanding it. Like, what if there was this one thing that was big? What if there was 12 of them?
Yeah,
kind of thing. So, if you want to know, possibly, because it's too early to say right now, what Marvel's going to be going for in big events and future stories, this is definitely a book you should read.
Yeah.
And it honors Nick Fury in a great way. So, yeah, it's a win-win.
Yeah, it leaves Nick Sr. in a place where this could be the perfect send-off and retirement for the character, or it could be the setup for 1,000 new stories, which I think is the perfect place to leave a legacy, a major character like that.
Yeah, I mean, he's a tricky character in that. He's pretty old. He's been around since World War II. And how many times can you be like, oh, I got the de-aging face mask?
And he's been four different kind of characters, too. Like, we've had Super Spy, we've had the Sergeant Rock era kind of thing, and then we've had the Man on the Wall, and this is...
The sci-fi spaceman.
It's a great celebration of all the characters that he has been.
That's true. Yeah, well said. Well, that's it for Top Books of the Week. In our next segment, Standout... Moment of the Week. This is our favorite panel or page that we just loved dearly. I loved Full Page Flash from Unstoppable Doom Patrol number 3. Chris Burnham crushes it. So, as Nathan was saying earlier, you know, most of the story is about Robot Man and...
Negative Man.
Negative Man in a car getting chased by Green
Lanterns. Which, by the way, I do love that at one point someone's like, Starbro is a stupid name. And he's like, we're called Negative Man and Robot Man.
Right. Get a grip, dude. Well, there's a moment where they're like, kind of like, I think Dennis Culver's like, well, what are the other heroes on this team doing? And we smash cut to, and you can see this on amputeecomics.com on this podcast post, Animal, Vegetable, Mineral Man attack! Right. Basically the team fighting Animal, Vegetable, Mineral Man. It's so ridiculous, that character's
name. And there's multiple, like, he's turned other people into versions of him. Like, there's like a pterodactyl with like half a human head. And,
Yeah, he's going to try to take over the world, and like, one of the characters is just like, what the fuck?
The chief saying, just don't let them bite you, is so funny to me.
James Gunn's going to use this villain at some point. Has to.
Oh, man.
Like, it's quirky enough for him to be like, I can't wait to use this character. And someone's like, what about, you know, Bane? He's like, no, this up. One. What was your favorite?
I will say, like, I also love anytime Alec Mappa shows up as Animal, Vegetable, Mineral Man in the Doom Patrol TV show. It's just always such a good gag.
It really is.
I really dug a moment from Darth Vader, Black, White, and Red, number 2, specifically from the story by David Pepos and Alessandro Vitti. This is Vader has been infected by a sort of chest-bursting alien spider. This whole book went full-on horror. It was also very close to my top two. But this moment in which Vader has been essentially like set on fire and had this alien pincer burst up from his chest. There's this shot of him pulling himself to his feet, engulfed in flames, and snapping off this pincer like from the control panel in the front of his body. And it's just the most metal thing I think I've ever seen.
It really is, yeah. I mean, it's almost at this point expected for Darth Vader to be badass. But now it's like, how do we do it a different way?
That's the funny thing about the comics, and especially in the last couple of years, is like, going by these books, Darth Vader should never have died. Like, Darth Vader should never have been defeated in the movie. Right. It's like, he's this unstoppable killing machine made of pure hatred. Like, the first...
This dude can, like, levitate a fucking 40 billion ton spaceship.
Dude, in Jason Aaron's story at the beginning of this book, he's like...
Crazy.
In a medically induced coma, he's fully paralyzed, and he blows up a lab and kills everyone inside just by thinking at them. It's so good.
In the first issue, he pulls all these guns out of the rebels' hands and fires all the guns at them, pointing them to. How is that even possible? I've been seeing this discourse lately on Twitter, Star Wars The Force Unleashed.
Oh.
Kind of, it pushed things too far.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how, like, the guy is basically a god by the time he gets to the end.
Yeah, Starkiller can literally disintegrate people with a force field.
Which is not canon. I'm pretty sure Lucasfilm has been like, no. But then we've got these comics that are pushing the boundaries like that again. So we'll see.
And I think Jason Aaron takes it as a personal challenge to make Darth Vader more badass every single time he gets to write him.
There should be one of these stories where Darth... This is just me spitballing here. Marvel, are you listening? Darth Vader shows up to a planet. He's got the Death Star. He's like, destroy it. Guy presses a button. Doesn't work. Ah, shoot. We didn't put enough dilithium crystals in. Darth Vader goes, I got it. And goes, kaboo, and just blows up the planet.
He just snaps his finger like Vegeta.
No, he wiggles his nose. Yeah, like
Bewitched. Idea Genie?
Yeah.
No, Bewitched.
Yeah, I don't
Bewitched.
Know. One of those. Both of them.
They're basically the same show.
So my number is 508, Marvel, if you want to call and send me a check. Anyway, that's our favorite moment.
So good.
In our next segment, top books for next week, we're talking about our most anticipated comic, and we picked the same book.
That's right.
We can't wait for DC Pride 2023.
Yeah, I'm so excited about it. They've got a really wonderful lineup of writers and artists this year. There's a John Constantine and John Kent stories. Two of my favorite Johnnies.
Yeah, and Grant Morrison's doing a story that everyone's really hype about with the multiverse.
That's right.
There's a tribute to Rachel Pollack. Tell me if I'm wrong. This is the third DC Pride book, I think, anthology that's been put out.
I think so, yeah.
And every single one is crushed. Mm-hmm. And every single one is like 100 pages of just like fun, quirky, giving characters that we don't normally see a chance to be in a story. And also create some creators that are less known that are getting a chance to write
One of our guests this week, Leah Williams, is writing a Harley Quinn, Poison Ivy, and Crush story that I can't wait for. We're getting more Circuit Breaker. We got a Midnighter and Apollo and Alan Scott story by Josh Trujillo and Donna Gio. There's so much to be excited about here.
We have a 5-page preview of Dreamer's YA debut by Nicola Mayans too, which is
I can't wait.
And Rye Hickman. And we keep saying this on the show, DC anthologies usually crush. So,
and just another friendly reminder to go pick up the DC Book of Pride. It's really fantastic. Another stressful week living in Florida and seeing people pass laws so that they can do other terrible things. So
I was saying to a friend this week, like, I don't have the imagination for how these laws are passed. Like, every time something comes out, I'm like, there's no way they
can stop themselves. Imagine having like Machiavellian ambition, and the only thing you use it for is to hate queer people. Like, it's fucking ridiculous. Anyway, I'm very much looking forward to DC Pride and looking forward to walking into a comic shop, picking that up, giving them my money, and enjoying, I'm not just going to walk out with it, and enjoying stories with some of my favorite characters.
I think you skipped a step there where you paid for it.
No, couldn't be me.
No, you're right. And spending money on things like this is, in a way, voting for more of these kind of things to be made. So it's important to sort of vote with your wallet, in a sense, when some things like this
absolutely
come around. Moving on to our next segment, Judging by the Cover. Talk about our favorite cover art next week. And like I said earlier in the show, there's not a lot of comics out next week, so it was a little tricky to find a really, really good cover. Although DC, good Lord, they put out like 6 variants on every book these days, so you just got to go find the variants sometimes. And I really liked the Detective Comics 1072 cover by Kelly Jones, the man, the myth, the compulsive masterpiece. This cover is, it's dark, it's twisted, it's funny. If you go to aftcomics.com, go to this podcast post, you can see these covers in full. I know this is a podcast you can't see, but we got Batman with an insanely ruffled cape standing on crouching on a bell. Looking for Joker with a flashlight or a lantern. Yeah. And Joker is hiding, impossibly holding an axe. I don't know how he's stuck inside the bell upside down, but he's like almost like just so enjoying that Batman hasn't found him yet. It's like they're playing hide and seek. And there's these creepy bats above Batman that are all upside down, obviously trying to get some sleep. And then the boards of bell tower they're in, it's like the crisscross of them and stuff, the and the shadows, play of light.
And I always love that Kelly Jones draws Batman's horns like absurdly tall. It's just so good.
It's so macabre.
And again, it's big week for Johnny Sorrow because he's in this book and he's in Power Girl Special number 1.
That's true. That's a good point. What was your favorite cover of the week? And is it because a movie studio is on it?
It's not. That's actually the one thing I don't like about this cover is that the 20th Century Studios logo is sort of intruding on it. But I love Dave Johnson's variant cover for Alien number 2. Everything about this, from the logo treatment sort of perfectly fitting into the two moons that we see here to... this pose of a xenomorph standing atop a little satellite dish and sort of gently pulling a dead soldier closer. I love this. We see the xenomorph sort of standing in front of a fiery background that is sort of creating a mist out of the snow, and it's all playing off of each other so well. I just think this is so badass. Anytime Dave Johnson gets to draw something spooky, I'm here for it.
Yeah, whenever there's like an absence of color, mm-hmm. like this with the white moon, it's so intriguing. And then there's like a nice glow on it, too.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, that spine on that alien.
It's so
man.
Good.
Damn.
It's so good.
If we saw one of these, you'd probably just die of shock.
I would hope so, before he gets me.
Not even because you thought it was fiction, right. but because it's so gross looking. Anyway, that's it for Judged by the Cover, Jr. In our next segment, join us as Leah Williams, Joanne Starr, join us to talk all about Power Girl and more. So, on with us is Leah Williams and Joanne Starr. Thank you so much for being on the APT Comics podcast.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us.
Congrats on the Power Girl special. We got a chance to read it early, and I think people are going to really love it. And thank you for bringing these characters into the dawn of DC.
Yeah, it's been an honor. Super, super excited about the special and about, you know, of course, the series that are kind of coming out of it for both Power Girl and Fire and Ice.
So to start go ahead.
Yeah, it's very exciting to be able to bring all these like amazing female characters and female creators.
Yes.
To the forefront.
Yeah. I mean, you guys are teamed up with Margaret Savage and Tasha Bustos. I mean, they're both, I mean, top tier AAA artists in the industry.
This is a gorgeous book, like all throughout. Absolutely.
Yeah.
To start at sort of a baseline, we wanted to know, like, what are your histories with these characters? Are they ones that you've been fans of for a while, or was this sort of like a cool chance to try something new?
I do have kind of an interesting history with Power Girl.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been waiting so long to tell the story and make this joke. But I used to work at a comic book shop, and I was the only girl they'd hired in like 10 years. Wow. So it was kind of disruptive to the customers, like the regular pull list guys. And, you know, like they would make cosplay requests of me very frequently. And the number one request that I got happened to be Power Girl.
Uh-huh.
So I picked up some Power Girl and started reading. And in my head, I'm hoping, like, please don't let the similarity, whatever they're seeing, please don't let it be the obvious. Please don't let it be the
gotcha.
Obvious. And of course it was. Of course it was. So now I get like sort of a sick sense of pleasure being the guardian of Power Girl from like a writing side. And you know what? Representation is important. Mm-hmm. It's a good time for big titty bitches.
I think we just found the title of the episode.
If I don't make the joke, then someone else is, and it's going to
sure.
be gross.
Own it.
So I have to like get right. in front of it immediately.
Totally. I just love when women.
Yeah, for me, I absolutely grew up on the Justice League books, the Justice League International books from the 80s.
Same.
So.
Yeah.
These have always been my favorite characters. I don't think I wasn't on DC's radar, and I don't think a Fire and Ice project was on DC's radar. This was absolutely something where I approached DC and I was like, these are the characters that I love.
Yeah.
I don't know why nobody's doing a book with them. I don't know why they've never had their own book. I want to do something. Here's what I think we should do. And I fought for it. And this has been actually a few years in the making. It's been through a number of developments. we really had to find a way to make it happen. But these are, they've always been my girls. The Justice League has always been my thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, beyond that, just, I would say, the extended works of Keith Giffen, and you'll see a lot of that in this project, but it's just, they're the perfect female superhero team, you know,
yeah.
they're
the original odd couple
tempered.
Of comics.
Yeah. And a little bit.
They deserve the attention.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're perfect.
Well, these are also characters, I mean, both Fire and Ice and Power Girl, all of these characters have a good bit of baggage, both emotionally and in terms of decades of continuity, changes and retcons and relaunches. How did you both approach creating these stories as jumping on points for new readers? Because the thing that I love about this book is it really feels like it all mattered, you know, and that's one of my favorite things to see in comics is just sort of embracing all of the women they have been.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with the Power Girl special. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's I like the phrase that you're using there, all of the women that they've been, because it's one of my favorite things about working in comics, in particular with licensed characters that have been around for a while, because over time, you know, when characters are handed off from creator to creator, they take on different qualities. And sometimes it's nuanced, and sometimes, you know, readers are going to be like, that's out of character. That's not sure. who they are at all. But I think for Power Girl in particular, she really became the sort of patchwork quilt of qualities that yeah. I just find really fascinating. And, you know, not all of it was necessarily intentional as she was being, you know, written before. Like, you know, for example, she is like the number one most sexually harassed character in all of comics.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's because it was played as a joke so many times over and over and over again that it just kind of amounts to this history that, like, well, that's mm-hmm. there.
Yeah. How do you handle
and
that?
What, yeah. what kind of toll does that take on somebody who has spent 20 years laughing it off or trying to laugh it off? Right.
Mm. Right. Exactly. I think that, you know, that's definitely a question worth exploring. And mm-hmm. In my own experience, it makes me feel really alienated in my own body being kind of a fetish object. Like mm-hmm. I have detachment to my physical self. I would much rather be like sentient blood mist than have a physical form. Sure. So I
wouldn't we all
in that way.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
I think that in, you know, to answer your question about like the mm-hmm. approach to writing kind of nuanced women, it's sort of perfect to pair up like Fire and Ice and Power Girl in the same special yeah. because now we've got like basically the pilot episode for these characters and bringing them to new readers. And it's like, here are women who are complex and they've got huge chips on their shoulders and are extremely different and trying to figure shit out.
Yeah.
And they're flawed. They're very obviously flawed.
Yeah. I think everything you've said is so perfect, both about the characters and about us as women, as creators, and how our perspectives sort of come into play, mm-hmm. creating these characters, writing these characters. Yeah, it's, for me, it was, with Fire and Ice, we really wanted to put them in Smallville to give them a fresh start. Mm-hmm. That's what the book is about, is we take them out of the world they've been living in and we put them in this new environment where they're reevaluating what they've been doing. And they are at a point in their lives where they're getting older and they're thinking about, is this for me? Is this not for me? Is this relationship even for me? Can they grow together or are they growing apart? Because they are, you know, as you said, this odd couple that they're very different, but they balance each other out. But balance is a tricky thing. It only works until someone pushes a little too far in one direction or the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then it's out of whack. So that's sort of what we have here, is that they are feeling the weight of everything that's been happening over the years,
mm-hmm.
that they've never received the fame and the acknowledgement that other heroes have.
Mm-hmm.
They've always been sort of the second string in the Justice League and honestly in the DC universe as a whole.
Yeah.
I mean, they've never had their own book. So they're struggling with all of these things and these points in their lives. And they both have different perspectives on where they go from here.
Mm-hmm.
and that comes to a head. So now they're in Smallville and they're taking a time out. Where do we go from here? So it is, it's a very complex relationship that they're dealing with. And so we see new aspects of their relationship and how they interact with each other.
Everything you just said lines up so perfectly with the way the backup reads in the special.
Yeah.
That's so compelling and interesting to see. And I can't wait for September because that sounds so cool.
Well, and that's one of the reasons why I got so excited when both of these series were announced, because it does feel like, you know, it's funny. If you go on the Power Girl Wikipedia page, the last reference to Power Girl is like, she's in the background talking to Blue Beetle in Doomsday Clock. And so I'm just sort of like, you know, and it's sort of the same with Fire and Ice, you know, Human Target notwithstanding. It was really exciting to see we're going to get these starring books with these characters that can be, you know, explored so much further, even though they've been around for so long. One of the things I've talked about on this podcast, if I can get a little personal, is that I have struggles with depression and self-worth and things like that. And one of the things that's so important about this book to me was seeing these characters who can control the elements and punch through reality, grappling with their own self-actualization or just trying to figure out their own hangups. I mean, are those themes that we can expect to be explored further in both of these series?
Oh, absolutely. I think that, you know, capabilities aside, extraordinary powers aside, these characters, well, I'll speak on, you know, just behalf of Power Girl, but sure. I can like see the similarities in Fire and Ice too. They're looking for their purpose and they don't really have a good grasp of that yet. Power Girl in particular has, you know, gone through some like devastatingly traumatic losses of her family, her home planet, her next home planet, her, you know, cousin and mentor who she was close to, like her entire support system, dead, gone. And she has lost her kind of like mission statement in being like, okay, we're sending you off to take care of your baby cousin, because then, you know, time shenanigans, he ended up being significantly older than her. And also now he's dead. And it's like, she's kind of adrift. She's looking for her purpose. And in the Power Girl special in particular, what we see is her finally coming to terms and like wanting to be more, to do something more, because she's always felt alienated from the rest of the Super family, you know, especially like being compared to Supergirl, who in her mind is like the perfected version of herself, like the alpha, and she is kind of like the beta version that nobody really likes. She's felt like an outsider, but through, you know, the events of like the Lazarus Reigns and kind of getting this psychic ability that is so devastatingly overwhelming to her, she's forced to relate to human beings, like on a literal level. She first was raised by like a spaceship AI and is not great at socialization or being close to other people. And then suddenly she's privy to the inner workings of every sentient being around her. It is completely overwhelming.
Right.
But it does force her out of her comfort zone and into this place of like, oh, okay. So everybody isn't thinking that they hate me because she can literally, you know, read their minds.
But even that is difficult to reckon with, right? Like if you talk to a loved one and you're like, I know you have issues with me. And they're like, no, you're like, this is you defeating yourself. Like even that's hard to accept, even if she can read their minds.
Sure. Yeah. And like, you know, I can also relate to the experiences of depression and how it becomes the number one voice inside of you. And it is hateful and it is cruel. And it is the one telling you that like, you are worthless and you don't belong here. But it's also something that you have to fight back against because, mm-hmm. you know, intellectually, you know, that's not true. You mm-hmm. belong here. You are loved. You deserve good things. And it's that internal struggle, I think, that is really pushing Power Girl throughout the special and in her series mm-hmm. because she is kind of operating out of spite against herself at this point, you know, like, yeah. you know what? Fuck you. Fuck me. I'm not gonna just roll over and like give in to these devastating thoughts I have about myself.
There are multiple like good for her moments in, yeah. in both the main story and the backup. And
it's like deeply just, powerful. Yeah. What you accomplish in the main story. It's I think a lot of people relate to it and like, help them kind of think about themselves, maybe even like kind of work through things just by reading the mm-hmm. story.
Thank you.
Yeah. As far as Fire and Ice, it is amazing how many parallels there are with Fire and Ice and yeah. Power Girl. It is such a perfect matchup in this book. But yeah. if you think about it, Ice died, right?
Yeah.
Which is a wild thing.
Yeah.
And it happens a lot, obviously, in these comics that right. people mm-hmm. die. But we don't explore it so much. People die and they come sure. back. And they then shrug what? It off.
Yeah.
So it is something we talk about that how that affects her perspective. You know, it's mm-hmm. she's coming back and this is really it's a fresh start in the sense that they're in Smallville, but for her it's really I have a new lease on life. What am I gonna do with it? But mm-hmm. for Fire, it's something different. She lost this person. And how does that affect her? She never wants to let go of her again. So maybe Fire's a little bit more codependent than she ever was.
Sure.
When we're talking about feelings of self-worth and that sort of thing, it's really Fire who's dealing more with that in this story. Because she does have these insecurities, both about her place mm-hmm. in the world as a valuable superhero and as, you know, a partner to Ice. Will I lose this friend? You know, are we going to stay together? Where do I belong in all of
yeah.
this? So there's a lot of complicated emotions that move
right.
through this story. Also lots of humor, don't worry. I don't want to touchy feely.
Oh, I mean, I knew we were in good hands when we got a bwahaha in the first story. So I was very happy about that.
That was good. Leah, I had to ask Johnny Sorrow, what makes him so fun to write?
I think he's like another highly underrated, underutilized yeah. character.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a suggestion from one of my brilliant editors, Paul Kaminsky, just kind of like tossed out, you know, what about Johnny Sorrow? What's he up to?
Also just a great name. Such a good name.
Yes. And such a like great design too
yeah.
and amazing backstory. And so the more I was like doing my research for this and kind of reading his back issues and learning more and more about him, just kind of falling more and more in love with this guy and mm-hmm. deciding, okay, yeah, I want readers to be like conflicted about being horny for Johnny Sorrow. I want them to have really complicated feelings about this villain
mm-hmm.
who like is relatable and is a sympathetic character.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, doesn't have a head traditionally and is up to some pretty heinous shit.
Right.
That's the best way that men should be. No head.
It solves so much.
And so in like my opening notes of the script, when mm-hmm. I'm just kind of like talking to Marguerite directly about, you know, what I'm sort of thinking in terms of like character design or approach, tone, whatever. My whole thing about Johnny Sorrow was that, you know, he should be like a sexy anime villain and we want people horny for him,
yep.
conflicted about it.
That makes sense.
And Marguerite
so much sense.
Was like, understood. Understood. And sure enough, like in every panel where we see Johnny, he's very kind of composed and
it's big tuxedo mask vibes.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Yes, that is the reference that I gave Marguerite.
Awesome.
Yes. Yeah, that's perfect. That's exactly kind of what we were going for. That sort of star-crossed romantic vibe.
Yeah, they're like ballroom dancing at the end. That's pretty cool. Yeah,
yeah, and there's like tentacles as he's doing it.
That's right, yeah. Joanne, we also have another problematic fave in this book in the form of Guy Gardner. superhero breakups seem to be the worst. And I just want to know, are they actually more difficult than they are for civilians, or are they just louder and more destructive?
I would say they're probably easier.
Yeah.
Because I imagine it would be easier for me if I was a superhero, because if I had those powers and I could use them against a guy who wronged me, right?
Sure.
That would be the dream. Like, and then you fly away. How is that not the dream? But
right.
No, but it seems to be very difficult for Ice. She seems to be like she can't get away from him. But
sure.
It's if I had her powers, I would never see him again.
And I love both of these. Both of these stories also have an element of Superman being sort of the den mother, or almost like voice of reason and compassion in the DC universe. Is that important to both of these stories, both of your stories going forward, that Superman be sort of like a calming presence, or is it sort of like a starting point for the clean slate?
I would say both. In Power Girl's instance, what she feels when she's around Earth Prime Superman is really complicated. He is like the younger visage of her beloved deceased mentor, but also substitute father figure. And that is what she's looking at when she sees him. So at the end of the Power Girl special, when, you know, we're getting this moment of resolution and kind of coming to terms with her wanting to be a part of his life and his family, and like, you know, telling him flat out, I'm going to fuck up, but give me a shot, please. He understands what she needs from him in that moment, which is like a paternal, warm, kind response. Like, okay,
yeah,
everything is going to be fine. You are totally fine.
Superman's like warm apple pie incarnate or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's Smallville. I mean, he is Smallville.
He really didn't like the American Pie movies. It just didn't
work for him.
That pie representation.
This. Exactly.
Yeah, I think for Ice, he's absolutely a calming presence. But for Fire, he's the opposite. Like, Fire finds him very patronizing.
Sure.
So, you know, she's just like, I do not need to be scolded by this man. I do not need his help. I can do this on my own. So that is, again, part of the divide in this situation. Mm. But yeah, he definitely presents this new start for them, but he, as far as whether he is calming to the situation, that will continue to be a divisive thing as the story goes on. We do have, and I don't know if this is a spoiler, Martha Kent is in the book.
Yay! Love Martha.
And she is a calming presence. Martha Kent, always calming. So.
Awesome. Love that.
Listeners of this show will know we loved Exterminators, Leah, and it was just so much fun. The Grindhouse vibes, like, so cool. And we were just wondering, and feel free to jump in here, Joanne, what DC characters or team would be ripe for an Exterminators-style Grindhouse book, do you think?
Supergirl would be the Laura Kenny character. Like, she would be the dry man, and what I call... So Laura Kenny was, like, the last member who was... added to this incredibly chaotic cast. And it was because she became available, and instantly I saw the potential for her as, like, what I like saying is the pinch of salt you add to brownie batter to make it all the sweeter in the end.
Love that. Yeah,
that's great. What Supergirl would be. Like, instantly I can see her in that role, and her total exasperation at you know, the other antics. But as far as like the rest of the cast, mm-hmm. I can't see it in any other way except Power Girl and Fire and Ice.
Sure.
Especially with where they're at in their lives right now. And the fact that like they're all kind of wild cards at the mm-hmm. moment, I think that there would be a lot of fun potential for that.
Nice.
Yeah, I have to say, if I was going to do like a grindhouse kind of book, it would have to be, like Leia said, either all women, or it would have to be like Captain Carrot and the Zoo Crew, you know, like...
Oh my gosh.
Like that would be insane.
Like a Gonzo Captain Carrot yeah. book would yeah. be so fun.
Oh man, or a Red Lantern grindhouse book.
Yes, yeah.
Do you know how TV shows have like a musical episode where it just changes up? You could do that with any comic, just do grindhouse, right?
I love it.
I'd love to, yeah.
We were talking about this off mic and I was like, I was trying to do like exact analogs almost, and I was like, "Is Livewire like the Boom Boom of DC Comics?" Like, do either of you have anything else to promote today? I know Joanne, you've got Sirens of the City is like coming to print in July, right?
Yes, from Boom, I think. Oh God, I don't know the exact date. Late July.
Okay,
they just gave us the date.
Awesome,
and. Actually, if you are on the East Coast, on June 23rd at the Smithsonian Museum of Natural History, Kari Randolph and I we're part of a large exhibit that's opening. Not cell phones, but we have there'll be a room that is all just giant comics that we made on the wall.
Wow,
that's so cool.
Explaining cell phones. So
that's awesome.
It'll be up for a few years, so you don't have to rush over there. But
okay, sweet. Right on.
And Leah, do you have anything else you'd like to talk about or hype?
I do have some really like unbelievably exciting yet unannounced projects kind of sure. secretly in the works right now.
Cool.
Okay.
But I think at the moment, please... pre-order the Power Girl ongoing series. Mm-hmm. First issue comes out September 5th, I believe. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And the Exterminators trade paperback just came out and
yeah.
Super fun. So check that out.
Nice.
And Fire and Ice launches the same day as well, I believe, September 5th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so order our books or we'll be very angry.
Please, we need more of this. Like I'm so excited for both of them. I'm actually going to my LCS after this to grab the previews and get those ordered for my pull list. Very excited.
I wanted to do a quick lightning round if you guys are up for it, like quick question answer that may or may not have anything to do with Power Girl Special, but they do definitely have something to do with Power Girl Special. It's only a couple questions. So, starting with, what is your favorite ice cream flavor?
I don't know if it exists anymore, but a few years back, there was like this Häagen-Dazs create your own ice cream flavor contest where people submitted recipes. And this one woman submitted like figgy toffee pudding ice cream.
Okay.
And of course, it won the contest and is like the best thing that I've ever tasted to this day.
Amazing.
I haven't been able to find it in years, but that's always what comes to mind when I hear that question.
Just chocolate. I'm not that interesting.
Sure. Classic.
Yeah.
Love it.
What is your favorite pet type?
I love pet type.
I know.
It's
a weird way to phrase it.
All of
angry
them.
Angry dog. All of them?
I'm sitting here in like a Pokemon hoodie. I've got a cat and a dog. Like just all of them.
You're writing a book with Streaky in it.
Who was an absolute asshole.
Yeah. I love it.
I love the inclusion of that. That was so good.
Yeah, I'm a cat girl, but I am the kind of weirdo that loves all animals. Like I'll let a tarantula crawl on my head and I'll pet snakes. And,
all right.
You know, yeah.
Love
I've
it.
Always wanted a raccoon, but I don't know if it's legal in my state. Anyway. Favorite.
Well, yeah, I can find one. It's free. You
yeah,
know?
That's true.
You don't have to. I don't see any cops on this call.
Just trap it and bring it inside. Let's see what happens with
my marshmallows.
Oh, do they really? Good tip.
Yeah.
Go buy a bag.
That's funny.
Who is your favorite Kryptonian?
I mean, that's pretty obvious, right?
Yeah. I would feel like I'm cheating on my book if I said anyone other than Power Girl.
Of course. Absolutely.
But also, she was just organically the first name that popped into my head. Nice. I have grown extremely attached to her in kind of, you know, as she's in my head and I'm trying to embody hers. Yeah.
Nice.
I'm going to say Superman. Because, well, he's Superman. And
no judgment.
You got to have a lot of balls to fly around with your underwear on the outside like that.
I love that. That's well said.
Respect. Yeah.
Just one more question. Do you play Marvel Snap?
No. I've also never seen any of the movies.
The Marvel movies? Wow. Really? Wow.
Yeah. Wow, wow. Or,
what? I saw Birds of Prey.
I love Birds of Prey.
I did. It was so fun. Funnily enough, I saw it in theaters with Vita Ayala, Teenie Howard, and our X-Men editor, Jordan D. White.
What a crew.
Nice.
But I don't play any of the games, and I haven't seen the movies. And it's kind of like an intentional thing.
Oh, that makes sense.
I don't want that feedback loop in my brain as I'm writing Marvel and DC stories.
Totally. I just don't keep mobile games on my phone anymore. It's as dangerous. A rule. I can't do it. Joanne?
No.
No, okay.
I don't play games in general because I would never get any work done.
It's, they're so addictive.
It's a struggle.
when we got the interview, I was really excited, but then I was also like, I was going to play Tears of the Kingdom.
I was just about to say, it is so fucking good. It's good.
It's a miracle of engineering. Like, literally. I've never.
It's like an educational game, the way you can build stuff.
I cannot.
Literally. I and understand I'm so how terrible it works. At it. Like, me too. I'm terrible with the build mechanic.
I've been walking everywhere and I just found out I can steal a horse. Like,
So you know, like the Korok that has the overstuffed bag and is separated from his friend. Yeah. I'm so terrible at like building things to get him to where he needs to go that I usually just like attach an octo balloon to him. And then use a gust board to blow him to where he needs to go.
I made the mistake of strapping a rocket to one of them, and now I can't find him. Like, I didn't know how.
Oh my god!
Monster! And the game. My god!
It was the first rocket I found, and I didn't know that they worked like that.
That's funny.
Well, good to try it out on like the cute little guy.
A living thing, yeah.
Have you seen the kind of like memes and videos online of the Korok crucifixes?
Oh my god! It's so twisted.
It's wild.
They're so cute.
Are you
crucifying things in a video game?
Yeah.
Is that what's happening?
Yeah. But it is possible.
They're putting them on a spit and like burning them alive.
But
a literal like burning cross.
And they're like cute.
Horse-drawn cart.
They're like leaves that are animate and like humanoid.
They're all canceled now.
And they can't die, but he definitely like... Too hot.
As a present, I would hide Koroks. I buy these little toys and hide them from my partner. And then I told them about the crucifixions, and she was crying, like so upset.
Absolutely.
So if you have a deep love and affection for Koroks, go pre-order Power Girl and Fire and Ice,
and pick up Power Girl Special number one out next week.
Absolutely.
Well, Leah, Joanne, thank you so much for being on the APT Comics podcast.
Thank you so much for having us. It was a blast chatting with you guys.
This was great.
Super fun.
Please come back anytime.